The Black Shore Arts Hour.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Black Shore Arts Hour. I'm Ellie and I am joined by my regular co-host, Matt Boothman.
Good morning.
Greetings to you. And we've also got the lovely Richard Stratton.
Good evening, depending on when you're listening to our podcast.
I'll cover us all with good afternoon.
I mean, it airs at midnight, so you could argue it as good morning, good night, I guess.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, good, maybe. This is a really good conversation to open the
show
with.
About to do the Singing in the Rain song now, right?
Yeah, of course. Okay, so coming up on the show, we've got several exciting things. We see the return of the much-loved segment, Strack and Alex Do Art.
You better believe it.
Yeah, new art, right. New art.
So new. And it's so current and up to date. It's sort of, it's a retrospective of Easter. We're having Strat and Alex paint some Easter eggs. So keep listening for that absolute gold. Egg-shaped gold.
Egg-shaped gold. I hear you should keep Easter in your heart all year round.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing.
Definitely the saying. God bless us, everyone. We're also going to be hearing Matt do a film review, and we're going to be chatting about several shows that amongst us we have seen with our joint eyes. That's right.
We have them on a timeshare basis.
Yeah, we're like those wizened sisters that predict the future in Hercules.
Yes, yeah. The oracles.
The fates. The Norns, yeah. Whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the scary scissors, that's right. Okay, good. Niche references. We're going to kick off with the thing we usually do a kick off with. Matt, what are you reviewing for us, please?
A Pacific Rim : Uprising.
Okay, cool. On that note, here's Matt's theme tune for you to recover.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt, tell us about your colon uprising.
I don't actually know if there's a colon in there.
You just feel like there should be.
Yeah, it was too good not to say. So this is the sequel, maybe long-awaited?
I'd say long-awaited.
Yeah.
Really?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Okay, but have you been awaiting?
I enjoyed the first one.
Me too.
Okay,
it's
cool.
A bit of escapist nonsense.
So. Awesome, okay.
Yeah, so the sequel to Pacific Rim, which was a Guillermo del Toro movie, scripted by Travis Beecham, where giant robots were built to fight giant monsters that came up out of the sea and tried to eat us all.
Yeah, standard.
That was basically the plot.
Yeah.
In that one, spoilers, we win.
Hence the two.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And in this one... it's been 10 years since we did a win, and it's sort of the world is in the process of still of being rebuilt from all of the giant monster smashing. Mm-hmm. Some bits of the world are a bit more rebuilt than others. Some are still a bit kind of slum-like and have these giant skeletons lying everywhere and buildings still destroyed and stuff, which is sort of sad when you consider that one of the... quite original or interesting or distinctive things about the first one was that it had this spirit of international cooperation. Like, everybody had pulled together and we'd all put aside our differences.
Common enemy.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So it's this one is sort of like, it sort of opens by suggesting that that kind of cooperation is only really possible when we're under threat of extinction. Which is kind of pessimistic, isn't
it?
Yeah, it is a little bit.
And also, if it's only supposed to be set 10 years later, that's pretty quick for friendliness to evaporate.
Yeah.
Much.
It's like, it's not open hostilities, but and there are still giant robots for some reason, even though there's no
and they found new uses for those.
Yeah, they're just building all the houses now.
Or they're just, like, picking fruit from really tall trees.
That would be great. If we saw them building houses, I would love that. They seem to be sort of being used variously for kind of security purposes.
Oh.
Overkill, though, sure.
Very overkill. Well, so there are people going through all of the giant robot scrapyards to try and reverse engineer their own ones for nefarious, seizing
robots.
Power war purposes.
Okay.
So you need some of them around to, like, kick those ones when
so
they
kind
arise.
Of kind of a mad situation, like a nuclear deterrent kind of
little
thing.
Little bit, sort of.
Proliferation.
It's not really delved into.
Do you think they could have maybe solved that issue if they'd had stricter guidelines around disposal of old robot parts?
Maybe. Maybe.
I feel like some rules and regs would have sorted this right out.
Yeah.
So some people are making a living off the wreckage, like John Boyega's character.
Yeah.
Jake Pentecost.
Good name.
Yeah. son of Idris Elba's character from the first one, Stacker Pentecost.
Okay, cool.
This is a franchise with some capital N names.
Okay.
Character names. So he is making a living as a scavenger, like finding bits and pieces. Hello, yes?
Yeah, he's looking quizzical. Idris's character, he's like, today we're cancelling the apocalypse, like, massive hero.
Funny you should say that.
How come he's scavenging?
It's difficult to live in that kind of shadow, isn't it?
I bet. Particularly when it's a shadow of a giant robot.
Being piloted by Idris Elba.
Yeah.
So we find out that Jake did have a part of his life where he was following in his dad's footsteps as a giant robot pilot, but he washed out. He couldn't take the pressure.
I thought you were just going to say, as a giant robot.
Spoiler, Idris Elba is in fact a giant robot. That's how he's so perfect.
That's why he's so good at piloting it, because it's just him.
So very early on, he, in the process of getting into trouble doing some scavenging, he meets Amara, played by Kaylee Spaney, who is, while he is making his living out of the wreckage, she is looking to the future and preparing, and she is one of various people in the world who see the possibility that giant monsters might come back and we might need to still fight them again at some point, maybe. And what do you know?
Oh, wow.
So is this after I think it's like decades in the first one, right, of fighting giant monsters?
Yeah.
In the space of 10 years, everyone's said, well, that's probably,
it's probably fine now.
And there was there's not a huge amount of people preparing for maybe the fact it would happen again?
Not a huge amount of people, no. Well, I mean, the fact that there's still giant robots being made and they're still recruiting pilots for them and that kind of thing. So some people obviously think it's a possibility. But, like, there was a big finale at the end of Pacific
Did
Rim.
Did you not watch the finale?
We've done this once and for all now.
There was an Independence Day as well, but Independence Day 2, they had a lot of preparation.
I've not seen the first or second Pacific Rim film, but a lot of this is sounding like the sequel to Independence Day, which was also a colon film.
It was a colon film. I can't remember what it was now. It was Independence Day colon Insurgents, I think it was.
Something like that.
I think
so.
Insurgents, yeah.
The Independence Day sequel was trash. This is better.
Better trash.
So,
yeah, Resurgence. Yeah,
yeah. Well, Resurgence. That's it. Not Insurgents. So the main difference between Uprising and its predecessor is just the look of it. So Guillermo del Toro directed the first one.
Mm.
This one is directed by Stephen S. DeKnight, and it's just generally shinier and cleaner.
Oh.
Like I rewatched Pacific Rim recently as well for the contrast. And something that is noticeable throughout that film is that there is always texture in the shots. Like, there is always smoke or rain or snow or sea spray, or like there's grit and texture kind of in the frame all the time, which somehow just helps give it weirdly helps give it scale and make it feel more real and less like a CG. Less like it's been, you know, created in a computer. And another thing that actually a lot of people had as a criticism of Pacific Rim, but which I rather liked, was that a lot of the big action sequences are at night or in a dark place, which meant that there was a lot of playing around with the lights on the robots and sort of bioluminescence in the monsters, and you ended up with some really interesting kind of light contrasts and light patterns and light paintings, and it had a really interesting dark and gloomy but still really colourful and kind of neon and psychedelic kind of look. It was a really interesting look. The Uprising just looks kind of like a normal, it looks like a CG blockbuster. It's kind of, yeah, it doesn't have that kind of distinct feel. I mean, it's not Guillermo del Toro directing this time, so you wouldn't expect it to be quite up to that. He is a proper auteur. He has a level of originality that you expect from him that you don't necessarily expect from somebody sort of stepping into his shoes. There is also, sort of in the story, there's less emphasis on this concept that Pacific Rim came up with of drift compatibility, which was that in order to pilot a giant robot, you have to have two people piloting it at once, who are sort of doing a little mind meld kind of thing, and they have to be really simpatico and like on each other's wavelengths in order to be able to control the thing well and fight well and do well against giant monsters. So it had this, it played around with this theme of like friendship and deep bonds and soulmate kind of stuff. And that there's less of that. That is less in the foreground for Uprising. It's a lot more this time. We have these kind of young recruits who are being shaped to fill big shoes. Mm. And that is kind of the theme of the whole thing. And it's almost, the movie itself is filling big shoes and all of the characters in it are doing the same thing. So it's a lot less about sort of finding that one person that you work really well with and really understand on a deep level, and much more about kind of overcoming your feelings of inadequacy wherever they come from, whether it's because you had a famous dad who everybody considers to be a hero and you don't think you're going to live up to that, or whether it's because you just don't have that confidence in yourself, or whether there are characters in it who are sort of being bullied by the other recruits and so don't feel adequate for that reason. And it's about kind of getting over those feelings and trying your best anyway, and recognizing that the people that you look up to and the people that you don't think you can ever be as good as started where you are as well. So it's still got kind of good stuff to say.
Good themes.
Even if it's a bit less filtered through the like the science fictional lens of this kind of mind melding process.
So that always seemed like just a bit of a added extra in the first film anyway. It seemed like that was a kind of dynamic in search of a theme. Like they needed to put something in, so that it was just kind of put in there. I remember it was like the one throwaway line as to why it was happening, and it was important, and then they was just thrown in. It was fun, but it was, yeah, I can see why it would do fun.
I mean, looking back at it, it's one of the things that makes it stand out as memorable and different to other sort of similar films, is that it creates a focus on people and on interpersonal dynamics rather than just on big robots punching things, which is why I think these movies stand out among sort of things that are superficially similar, like Transformers, which have always suffered because, A, like all of the action scenes just look like a close-up shot of some scrap metal rolling down a hill, and because that like the human characters aren't engaging and like nobody really cares what happens to them, whereas the Pacific Rim films have done a bit better on like portraying people in general and having human characters who you actually care about, but also specifically it's a cut above a lot of similar films when it comes to showing intense healthy friendships between men and women that don't tend romantic.
Oh, well
which is
done.
A really rare thing to see in a big Hollywood blockbuster.
Platonic!
Yeah.
It's also good because, why would that happen when you're fighting necessarily? Yeah, exactly. When it's, like, there are big robots over here. Like,
ain't nobody got time for that.
Let's focus on those.
Yeah, it's about sort of, it's...
Later, dear!
It's about relationships that are founded on sort of mutual respect and recognition of each other's skills and strengths and things, rather than, I think this person is hot.
Yeah.
And the two scientists...
The two scientists are still...
They were fun.
They are good. And there are some... this film has some good twists that were surprising and I didn't see coming, but that still make total sense for the characters that they involve, which I think is a really difficult thing to pull off. Mm. It ends up showing characters that you thought you knew in a completely different light and kind of keeping things fresh. So there are things that it does right. It has that right balance of having the people and the character relationships driving the plot, and then the big set pieces keep the action up and keep the blood pumping, but it's always driven because you are invested in the outcome because you care about the people in the cockpit rather than because you just want to see a robot punch a thing.
Mm.
So overall, it's not, I don't think it's as distinctive or interesting as the original Pacific Rim, but I think it's a decent successor. It's a fun blockbuster that is not boring.
So if, you went to see the first one, worth seeing the second one. Yeah, I'm going to spoil the franchise.
And really, John Boyega really carries the whole thing on his,
he's very good.
He's very charismatic. And I think over, the sequel actually comes out slightly ahead on among the core cast, like interesting characters in there, because Charlie Hunnam's character in the first Pacific Rim was a bit of a non-entity, and he was a bit of like a pretty man.
Plus, it's Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
I find him very dull.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. He wasn't the greatest. He wasn't the most kind of interesting or compelling character. Whereas John Boyega has an interesting character to play and is a very compelling actor to watch on screen. So he kind of bumps the average up among the main cast of like people who are watchable and who you care about. So yeah, there are areas where it actually does better than the original.
I do have a little bit of bad news for you.
Oh no,
there's no colon in the title.
Well, that's bad then.
I mean,
my joke. We're gonna have to cut that now.
No, we're gonna keep it.
We're cancelling the joke.
That's another thing. There, it doesn't have the big overblown lines. Like the script is not as overblown, and it doesn't have that bravado that Travis Beecham's script for Pacific Rim had. So there are no lines on a par with "We are cancelling the apocalypse," which is Idris Elba's iconic line from the first one.
Yeah, I guess if it's starting where that's all kind of happened, because you're thrown into the battle in the first one, it's kind of part of it. I can see why the bravado is very much front, foremost. Whereas if this one's like nice rebuilding, there's less reason for people to stand on top with
and make big
declarations. Fire in the background, yelling at their troops,
just shouting at the sky. Well, I've not seen these films, and I feel like I want to see at least the first one now.
That's good.
And maybe on the strength of John Boyega, seeing the second also.
I think the first one's on Netflix at the moment.
Is it?
Maybe.
Not worth checking out.
I'm pretty sure.
Maybe I'll just check that for you.
Yeah, I think it was on one of those 25 best films on Netflix. Kind
of what, when you were spending 45 minutes trying to find something to watch?
Maybe it was just in the US. It was definitely on the list. Is it on there?
No, it's not.
Well, there we go then.
No, you can explore titles related to Pacific Rim.
Pacific, which is the worst cartoon on there.
Yeah, so there you go, guys. It's not on Netflix UK, but probably available in other places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much, Matt. And as per usual, I will ask, but with no expectations, any idea what you might be reviewing for us next time?
No idea.
Okay, good.
I'm trying to work out. Has anybody got any idea when A Wrinkle in Time is supposed to come out here?
It's already come out.
I thought it was. It's just not showing at my local then.
They're not showing. It came out and showed a sort of normal slots at my local cinema, and now it's only doing it like once a day at a weird time.
Mm. What is it with the weird releases?
I know.
Annihilation and now this.
Yeah. Mm. And now this! So, I mean, yeah, you might have to search for a place, because I want to go and see it as well. And of course, it'll be, what, the 23rd of April is the new Avengers, is that right?
It is.
Yeah. It's
Avengers O'Clock.
Woo! So that's on the periphery. Okay, well, you know, it'll be a surprise. If anyone's got any strong feelings about what they think Matt should be reviewing for us, then do get in touch, and you can do so in a myriad of ways, and this jingle will tell you some of them.
Where can you find Blackshaw? Is it on Twitter?
Yeah!
That's right! It's at Blackshaw Update. Is it on Instagram?
Yeah!
That's right! It's at Blackshaw Theatre. Is it on Facebook?
Yes!
That's right, it's at Blackshaw Online. And don't forget, you can also find Blackshaw at
BlackshawOnline.com! Yes!
So now it's time for what I imagine you've all been waiting for. It is, of course, the returning, amazing, wonderful, brilliant segment that is Strat and Alex Do Art.
They've had some time off doing art, and now they're going to do some more.
They've been resting on their artistic laurels.
Yeah, recharging their artistic batteries.
And now they're back in the game.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Strat and Alex do art.
Yes, art. Oh, I mean, it looks lovely, mate.
Well, we are ready yet again for another storming section of art. Strat, Alex, how are you feeling?
confident.
Excited.
Excited. Oh. Little plea for you there, guys.
Oh, really shelling out on those pounds, aren't you? Oh, God. It's no yoking with you, is there?
Okay.
You shouldn't have started this.
Okay, so this is an Easter retrospective. Mm-hmm. If you cast your minds back to a couple of weeks ago, it was Easter.
It was, wasn't it?
It was. We done that. And one of the traditions of Easter mm-hmm. is the art of painting eggs.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to have you guys have a go at today.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. We have prepared some lovely hard-boiled eggs.
Not your standard eggs.
No.
We were surprised at the mm-hmm. tone of the egg.
They were
very rude.
They're a lovely pastel blue.
They are.
Yeah.
And they come naturally that colour.
Are they duck?
No. They're normal hen eggs. Well, not normal. They're blue hen eggs.
From blue hens?
Yeah, if you like.
Are they French eggs?
They're laid by Smurfs.
Oh, proper Smurfs, just squirting out them eggs.
Okay, wow. So we will take some pics of the naked eggs for you, so you can see the comparison. But the idea is that you guys will spend 15 minutes mm-hmm. painting them to sort of whatever design you can possibly think of. But the theme we're going for is spring.
Okay.
So something Eastery, springy.
Something appropriate for the occasion.
Exactly.
Using all of the three-dimensional canvas offered by
mm-hmm.
the egg.
Mm-hmm. So you've got an egg each with some backup eggs in mm-hmm. case of accidents. They are hard-boiled, so, I mean...
It's more in case of, like, paint accidents yeah. rather than, like, breakage accidents.
Yeah, let's say that. So this is not a challenge for you to smash those eggs. Smear them into my floor.
Oh.
Not a challenge.
So we're painting eggs, not painting with eggs.
Correct. That would be an outdoor challenge, I think.
With a tarpaulin at the very minimum.
Yeah, because I don't want the smell of that in my flat forever.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. So, any sort of thoughts before you get going?
I'm instantly intrigued. I've had some ideas. They've mm-hmm. now been changed because of the spring theme.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to playing around with those.
Okay.
Historically, I've not done very well with the painting tasks.
Hey, your Titanic was quite the...
Diorama.
It's.
Okay. All right.
So I'm sure it will be great.
Slightly intrepidation sensed over this end,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, I have an idea, but it's terribly ambitious for the amount of skill I can bring to the task.
Shoot for the moon, Stratton.
Yes. And then even if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard that phrase before.
Really?
That's lovely.
Oh, that's awful, isn't it?
In the dark, quiet blackness of space.
They don't often include that bit.
I'm now just expecting a jet black egg.
Yes.
Is that what spring means to you?
Yeah.
Nice. Suffocating in the quiet darkness of space.
Yeah.
That's the message of Easter.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll go with that. And I'm intrigued to see how you get on. Best of luck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. So following that very exciting opener for Strat and Alex doing art, we're going to give you a little theatre interlude. We've been seeing some.
Yeah. Sometimes we see it as well as make it.
That's right. So we're going to start with something that, Matt, you told us last time you were going to see, and now you have done seen it.
Yeah, I followed through.
Yeah, good. Let's lead with that. So it was, of course, The Great Wave.
Yes.
At the Nash.
At the National Theatre by Francis Turnley, which is a... So it is the story of two sisters in Japan who are both caught in a big storm and one of them disappears. And it's going to be a difficult one to talk about because I don't want to spoil it
yeah.
for people because I was quite surprised by it and
okay.
I think I want other people to have that
yeah.
experience.
Okay. You can
but
keep it brief. It's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah. But it from the first I was settling into the first couple of scenes, getting ready to be a bit bored for two
right.
and a half hours. The beginning setup after one of the sisters disappears is very it's very Broadchurch. It's very like kind of every BBC and ITV tentpole crime
yeah.
drama where it's like something bad happens and it exposes all the cracks in a small community and everybody turns on each other and all their secrets get revealed
yeah.
and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, that's what it's going to be, and almost kind of slightly switched off. And then it is not that.
Oh, okay.
At all. And it's actually very interesting and really, really moving.
Okay.
And you do actually, it's not like the sister who disappears is then written out. We get to kind of follow both of them in parallel over the course of years, and it's based on true events. So I think from reading the program, not a specific like they didn't take specific real people and a specific real event, but it is a series of events that affected Japanese coastal communities over a period of years between the 70s and the early 2000s.
Okay.
And kind of all of the political and personal aftermath of all of that.
Excellent. And so is it a recommended watch?
It really is.
Okay. Well, you've got limited time, but if you want to go and see it, it is running until the 14th of April at the National. So get your theatre boots on and go march down there.
Yeah, head on.
Okay.
See if it gets taken anywhere else after.
Yeah. Well, I hope so, because I'd quite like to see it, but I am not able to see it before the 14th. In great contrast, I went to see 42nd Street, which is, as I described last time, junk food theatre. And it was exactly as I had anticipated.
You feel a little bit bloated the next morning? A
little bit. A little bit bilious.
in your theatre organs.
All I wanted was to see some beautiful synchronized dancing, and that is what I saw. I mean, it's a cast of like 50 people, and at points almost all of them are dancing in wonderful syncope.
So total contrast in that it was pretty much exactly what you expected it to be.
Yes.
And that was a good thing.
Yes, and fluffy. In contrast to the show, The Great Wave.
Yeah.
There's no real plot. There's no real acting. And there's a lot of offensive lines in there.
Oh, dear.
The misogyny is rife.
Oh, no.
There was a few bits, which didn't spoil it for me, because I allowed myself to just focus on the dancing, and that's what I was there for, and that's what I really liked. But there were a few bits which really could have riled me if I'd not gone in that mindset. There was one moment where a male character, a much older male character, looks at a young woman who is in a dance outfit and looks at her chest and says, she says something about how she's going to be a big star, and he says, "You will be if you can make those two sing." And I was like, uh-huh.
Which can work if it's conscious. Does he get his comeuppance at all?
No.
Oh, damn.
No, no, no. There's no comeuppance for anyone. there's a lot of just like leching. Just leching.
Oh.
That happens. And it's just like, yeah, fine, sure.
Why do you think they've revived it?
Well, the thing, I think they've revived it because it's a big, shiny, sparkly extravaganza with pretty good songs. Bums on seats. The set is outstanding, really incredible. I think the thing that rankled a little bit was like those moments of heavy misogyny could just have been taken out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I say, the plot doesn't really exist. There isn't really a narrative. The acting's terrible. They're not actors, they're dancers. And so it wouldn't have harmed the structural integrity of the piece to just take out the worst of the misogyny.
It wasn't load-bearing misogyny.
No. The show itself is always going to be fairly misogynistic because it's set in the 30s and it's about, basically dancing girls, and they're all treated like objects. And that's always going to happen in this particular show. But they could have just taken out the most offensive segments and exchanges without that affecting the running of the show at all. And I just thought, what if you're reviving a show, why keep that stuff in?
Yeah.
And people be like, oh, it's of its time. It's like, yeah, exactly. Take it out.
Yeah, it's not that time anymore.
No. So, and like you say, no one got their comeuppance. It wasn't like, oh, it's okay, they're being a terrible person because a few scenes later they're gonna get it handed to them. It doesn't, it's not like that. So it was, I was sort of, I did really, really enjoy the spectacle. The dancing is incredible. It's very, very well done. All performers are insanely good. But the show itself is problematic. Very problematic.
Are the Is it a show where the choreography and the dance sequences are sort of re-choreographed anew for every production, or is there kind of a, do you know if there's a set?
I don't know. So, I don't know actually.
Whether they've brought anything to it.
I've never seen it before, okay. So I'm afraid I don't know. But it's just pretty dazzling, the whole thing. And you can see the money in the set. Like, they have a giant set of stairs that just emerges out of nowhere, and they have an entire train that's a honeymoon train. And they have, like, you know, on the Muppet Show Tonight, where they have a big wall of arches,
yeah,
and then people appear in lit up arches. They have one of those.
Are there Muppets in them, though?
No. Just people. And they have a train station, and they have... Oh, just all sorts. Like, ridiculous.
This is like, it's set design if money were no object.
Yeah, it really is. So it was really enjoyable. I would just say go prepared to have to ignore some pretty...
Yeah.
Tripey.
I remember you saying you were particularly looking forward to there being lots of tap, because usually there's like one tap number and no others.
This is very tap heavy. The sort of main character, the whole reason that she becomes the star of the show is because she's so good at tap dancing.
Excellent.
So it's really...
So it's a heavy plot point, so they've got to have lots of it.
Yes, exactly. I know, it was just beautiful. So much tap dancing. I would see it again just to watch the tap dancing.
Oh, nice. So for fans of tap dancing who are capable of shutting off the bit of their brain that deals with
prejudice. I mean, I don't care if this is a spoiler because it's so terrible. But so she has to very quickly learn the show because she steps in to fill the boots of the star who's broken their leg. And she has like 36 hours to learn the lead of the show. And the producer, this producer is obviously an older man, and he's like, come on, you've got to do it. We've only got 2 hours till curtain up, and you still haven't got this routine down. And this scene where your love interest walks in, you're not being enthusiastic enough. When he walks in, it's going to be like, bow, pam, ah, this man is walking in, it's amazing. And she's like, oh, I've never been in love. So he kisses her.
Oh, no.
The producer. And he's like, I'll show you love. And then he kisses her, and it's all like, ugh, gross. And then she's like, oh, it goes all floopy. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's what love is. Great.
Was it written by a man?
I don't know. Probably. But, it's just a little bit silly. But it does have great songs in.
Good.
It's one of those musicals where I sort of went, oh, that's where that song's from.
Oh, one of them.
Yeah. So it's got We're in the Money.
Oh, right.
Lullaby of Broadway.
Ah, I didn't realise these were from this.
So you kind of go, oh, that song. If you're looking for a bit of glitz and glam, some lovely dancing, then get some cheap ticks and go down. Just turn off your little, your feminist filter, your modern day filter, your I care about acting and narrative filter, and then you'll love it.
Just think of it as dance.
Yes, think of it as a dance show and ignore any in-between bits. Great. Well, on that note, let's dive back into some more fluff and see how Strat and Alex got on with their challenge this time.
Strat and Alex do art.
Right, so we've come to the end of the timing available to you. How are you both feeling? How was the experience of painting those eggs?
It's all right. It was all right. It was quite fun. It's quite fun painting in miniature.
Yep. And you've both got some fancy candlesticks as holders.
They are the fanciest egg display like things ever.
So we'll be sure to feature those in the photos online. Mm. So let's start with Alex. Talk us through your design.
I wasn't particularly imaginative with my choice. I decided to paint some daffodils because I thought they're very spring.
Yes,
I think I can paint those off of the memory.
Yeah,
and had a pop at that, and I did one, and I thought I'll do another, and then I did a third, and you've got a little triptych of daffodils.
So can you just turn it round for me so I can see all the way around it? So there are daffodils and also sort of the lovely greenery,
yeah.
The fronds.
The verdant undergrowth surrounding the daffodils.
And that goes all the way around the egg there.
Yeah.
And you've sort of taken advantage of the pastel blue egg.
Yes.
That looks like the sky.
Yeah, I was quite happy when I realised that halfway through painting and was like, oh, that looks like sky.
I love that you're not even going to pretend that was part of the plan.
Nope.
Great
art is a process of discovery.
Yeah. A series of happy accidents.
Yeah, no, very much so.
Well, Strat, talk us through your design, please.
So I picked this egg with all these cracks on it.
Yes, it's got sort of veins running through it.
Yeah, because I thought, what's spring about? What's spring's about birth and hatching stuff. And I thought, well, I want to make it look like something's hatching out of the egg.
Ah.
But I can't draw chickens or anything. and so I thought, what's spring? Fantasy! Spring is a fantasy time. And therefore, I'm going to do something surprising with my egg and make it a little dragon egg.
Oh.
So mine is the birth of the traditional spring dragon.
Oh, is that the dragon's eye?
Yes, it's looking out.
I feel like the dragon's going to be a lot bigger than the egg would suggest.
Yes, but dragons are magic, so that's what's going
okay.
on.
Okay.
It's a TARDIS egg.
It is a TARDIS egg.
On the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't going for necessarily realism.
No,
I figured something I could do and thought I might be able to do half good. I went with it.
Yeah, I really like the colour choice there. Nice purples and like a bit of green in the eye maybe.
Yeah, yes. I tried to do some stuff with layering on colour with the starting with black, and then that was like some yellow that went on it.
You've done
and it then painted
the
on
right
top
way round, and it looks good.
Yes, I learned like that from your Titanic.
Oh.
I was like, he painted stuff on top of other stuff rather than trying to paint round things. So this for me is development.
Yes.
High five.
You're experiencing some personal development.
Yeah, yeah.
That's lovely.
My painting technique is coming along.
Beautiful. Hey, I'm
kind
happy.
Of, I can't say this is necessarily on theme. I think it's a stretch to say that it is. But you know what? I saw my chance to do something half decent and I took it.
I think birth is definitely a legitimate spring thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Theme.
No, absolutely. Birth.
I think the link to fantasy was total rubbish, but the...
Yeah, that was shoehorned in. But I like the fact you've gone with birth. You've decided that chicken's going to be a bit boring, maybe.
Yeah.
And then gone with a dragon that also comes out with an egg.
I know what chicken I was. They just seemed like big black... Because I was going to do one and I thought, no, chickens have just got like black beady eyes, aren't they? It's nothing...
Yeah,
evil. They're probably more evil looking than dragons.
Yeah, no chance really... to show off your skills there.
Yeah, exactly. No. I don't think they necessarily have pupils.
He's just drawn a round black circle on an egg and gone, it's a chicken.
That would have been a lot less stressful and a lot easier.
It's abstract and representational.
Oh, it's beautiful what it is. I mean, I'm well done.
Yeah, if you distill a chicken down to its very base thing, like Picasso did with the bull.
Yeah.
Okay.
And distill a chicken down and it's a black circle.
Yep.
Yeah. Matt, what's your thoughts?
I really like Alex's and I was definitely going to go that way, but that was partly because Strat kept his
secret.
Strat's is only painted on one side, so he could successfully keep his secret for a big reveal at the judges' table, which Alex couldn't because he's done a nice 3D. Yeah. I'm still a bit torn because I really like that Alex has used the whole canvas.
Yes.
But I also like Strat's creative interpretation.
I think Strat's been very clever because he's chosen an egg that already had lots of cracks in, so he didn't have to do those himself.
Yeah, I added to the thing.
Which is clever, but I do, I feel like not using the whole canvas is a bit of a shame. I feel like Strat's is like a site-specific installation.
Wow, that's clever. I like that.
Yeah. It wouldn't have worked as well on any other egg.
No, it wouldn't have worked at all, I don't think, on an uncracked egg.
No.
So,
it's
really
one.
Tricky,
it's
though, this decision.
One. It's another instance where they're despite being both on the same, like, with the same starting materials, they're so different that it's difficult to judge them on the same...
Yeah, yes.
...scale.
Yeah, they're on
Because I love
scales.
Alex's daffodils.
They're
they
beautiful.
Look so good.
Yes. Very
but
hard.
I'm a big nerd and I like dragons. I think I'm talking myself into back round to where I started and it being Alex.
Yeah. And I think, what do you think? I think I'm going to agree with you on this occasion. But I think Strat really, you know, special commendation for how clever it is. And
thank you.
And the personal growth that you've made.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Alex should win because his is spring and mine is a dragon.
Yeah, okay. If the theme was dragons, then. Well, great. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Go on. Treat yourself to something.
Subscribe to the Blackshaw Arts Hour on your generic podcast resource.
You deserve it.
What a rollercoaster of excitement.
Oh, yeah, it was oval too quickly.
Oh, good. We'll stop now. We are now going to be having a little chat about a very exciting other thing, which we've mentioned before, which is Merely Role Players, our sister podcast.
Yeah, this is a role-playing game podcast, which I create some scenarios, and you and some other people sit down and tell me what you do in those scenarios, and it's hilarious.
Yes,
and sometimes dice happen.
We run rampant through the worlds that you create and do things that you didn't want us to do, and then fantastic things happen. We have just come off the back of recording series 3. Is that right?
So series 3 is airing at the moment.
Yes, and we're going to be recording series 4 really soon, which is very exciting. But we can't tell you about that. It's top secret.
Yeah.
So series 3 gives the opportunity to binge on 1 and 2 if you like ahead of that, and series 3 is set in a western area.
It is set in the Wild West.
The Wild West, that's a much better way
to put it. Wild West.
Yes.
Like the movie Wild West rather than the strict historical Wild West.
Yeah, it's very much Wild Wild West, Wiki 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 Wild Wild West. I in fact am named after Will Smith's character in that film. So that's how committed I am.
So you're named after his character and some of the lyrics from his theme tune.
Yes. Hey, it's great. And Wild West was a time when I had really decided that actually it's a role-play game and I can go completely wild. So I do some rather outlandish things.
Yeah, you do. And I think we're going to hear you doing some outlandish things in the clip coming up.
Yeah, and sometimes they come off really well and sometimes they don't.
Sometimes the dice are just not on your side.
Yeah, so we're going to see what happens in that instance. Okay, I'm going to run off.
You run to the gate of the stockade. It's shut.
I'm going to vault over it.
Amazing. Roll wild.
God damn it. 6.
You try and vault this gate.
Just
which
like
is,
fall flat on my face.
You try and vault this gate, which is topped, may I remind you, with spiked spiked logs.
Yeah, it was maybe a little bit impetuous.
And you don't manage to get over, and you wound yourself on the spiked top as you're trying to get over. So you kind of take a bit out, like one of them sort of sticks in your side a bit, and you fall back on the same side that you started on.
Great, so, bit of light stabbing.
Yeah, so cross off a wound, and the man says, "What was that? Just knock like a normal."
I was trying to keep things interesting. Yeah,
it certainly is.
While his attention has been taken by Ellie's pratfalling, I'm just going to kind of trot up to the entrance of the mine and kind of see if I can hear anything or see anything. I'm not going to go in right yet, but I want to see if I can work out what's there. And if I can't, I'm going to call out.
It's dark in there. You can see the tracks still heading further in. The track slopes down slightly and just sort of goes into darkness. And there's a kind of soft glow further on, so it seems like maybe there's a dark stretch and then there is an area where maybe people are and lights are.
Okay.
But you can't see a huge amount just from the entrance.
Okay. I call it. Anyone in there?
No response.
I'm going in. Just carefully walking down the thing.
Hey, I said don't go in there!
I'm just going to keep on walking.
Oh, rebel.
He chases after you.
What? Leaving me just like bleeding on the floor? Thanks, everyone.
You two are left. Ellie's left, lightly stabbed on the floor. Helen is also there. The cart is there with the tarp over it.
and the man runs up, he chases you down, and attempts to tackle you to the ground.
Ooh.
What do you do?
Right, so when you say attempt, is that nearly, can I see him coming?
You heard him yell and you hear his footsteps coming after you, yeah.
Right, so, and he's going to look like he's going to look like a threat to me.
Yeah.
Ooh, what's he going to do?
Are you trying to work out whether the shit has hit the fan?
No, I just wasn't.
I think you can work out if he's going to use his gun or not.
Yeah, I'm just going to, like, casually, so not in a threatening, I'm absolutely going to shoot you, but I'm just going, because with my long coat, I'm just going to open it up and sort of, like, just half take the gun out of the holster and just look at him and go, stop.
So this is a sort of holding your ground, trying to threaten him, so I think this is probably a stoic move.
Yeah, all right.
So roll stoic for me.
Yeah,
good. That's a full success. He stops in his tracks, seeing with your hand on the gun.
I'm gonna put, at the moment he does that to show that I'm really not a threat. I'm just like, you better not be messing with me. I'm just going to put it back into the full holster and sort of like let go of it. But my hand is going to do that thing where it kind of hovers over the gun.
He's holding his hands up, palm out to you, and he says, "I asked you not to go down there, sir. I really think this is something for Catastrophe to have a look at. Not some stranger just rolled into town."
I understand, but this is kind of my deal, and I'm really only here to help.
What do you mean it's your deal?
Let's talk about this when we're not in a place where apparently something bad is going on, shall we?
Well, you come out of there then.
How about you tell me what's going on, why I shouldn't see it?
You ain't the law around here, sir. I need the law.
I know no one's the law around here.
Yeah, so you can see how the rolls of the dice really do affect gameplay.
So hopefully that gives you a bit of a flavour of the sort of tone of the way things play out.
Yeah, irreverent, is that the tone?
Yeah, but I think with some actual like improv dialogue in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's Strat there causing trouble.
Yeah, that is the role he took on for himself in this adventure.
Yeah, and he continues to get into trouble. And I'm looking forward to the next episode airing because things kick up a real gear.
Yeah, I quite like how this... So this season is in 5 acts.
Yeah.
And I quite like how sort of the first couple are a kind of getting to know the people in the town.
Getting to know.
And then there's a bit of a murder mystery. And then it almost sort of, while still being a Western, switches genres a little bit halfway through episode 3.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good fun one to have been part of, and I still find it hilarious to listen back to, which feels very egotistical, but I think it's like after a bit of time you sort of forget the little things that happened, and in the moment it's all quite adrenaline fueled, so you don't necessarily make considered decisions. It's a lot of gut reaction, and that's what happens in the clip we're about to listen to, because I get put into a sticky situation that I have to try and talk my way out of or into.
Yeah, you've decided that you want to do a bit of investigating.
Yeah,
but you've got to talk your way past some townsfolk first.
Yes, and they're really not into the idea of anyone investigating, so I have to take a different tack. So I try to channel my period drama fragile woman and see what it would be that would convince these people to let me through.
And huddled in that area, you find 4 variously grizzled mining types.
Ooh.
Huddled, sat down on pallets and rolled up overalls and stuff, playing cards. One of them says, "Hey, yeah, you ain't supposed to be down here. I don't know you. You're new in town, ain't you?"
"Yes, hello, chaps. Yeehaw."
"Nobody's supposed to be down here. We were told stay here. Don't come out. Wait for the law."
"Oh, I'm terribly sorry." And I fan my face at this point. "We were just on a nice walk and were so curious about the mines and how they might work and what all these men might be up to all day, being curious women folk.
So we just wanted to come and, you know, see what's the what. How are you all doing?
This is a dangerous place. You ain't supposed to just wander. Folks ain't supposed to just wander down the mine.
Oh, come on.
It's dangerous at the best of times, and even worse today.
You're playing cards. Seems fine.
This tunnel's fine. It's less stable further on.
Oh, what's happened?
No, it's a mine. mines ain't always the safest of places.
No, but you said, especially today.
Oh, well, that ain't to do with the stability of the mine. And another one says, shut up, don't tell them stuff. They're strangers.
Oh, a stranger's just a friend you haven't met yet. So, tell me, pals, what's been happening? Oh. I'm being sneaky.
Yeah, I'll allow that.
Good. 10, yes.
Yeah. One of them in the back who hasn't spoken yet says,
we'll be all over town soon enough. Ain't no harm in telling them there's been a murder down here in the mine. We came down, and one of them tries to shut him up, and he's like, get off of me. We came down here to work this morning as usual, and there was one of the guys from the crew was already down here dead in a pool of his own blood just down that shaft down there.
Oh, well, how awful for you all. How are you feeling about it?
It's a tough life. You have got to get used to it, but it always hits you hard, you know? That's why we're trying to take our minds off it playing these cards here.
Of course. Well, who could have done such a thing? Did he have any enemies?
A different one, one of the ones who spoke earlier, says he didn't exactly have no friends.
Oh, dear. And what was his name? Who was this poor person?
Oh, John.
Thank you, you loose-lipped bunch of people. That's very nice. I say that in my head. Don't say that out loud. How awful. I mean, my friend here is very religious, and she would really like to go and say a quick prayer at the spot where it happened.
Yes.
So we're just going to very carefully walk round there. No harm will come to us, I assure you. And just say a little prayer. I'm sure you God-fearing folks won't mind.
That sounds very appropriate, ma'am.
Doesn't it?
So there we go. If you're ever in a tough spot, just, say something like, my friend is very religious.
And if you want to know how that turns out in the story, then you should listen to the whole episode.
Yeah, and I want to do that. How do I do that, Matt?
So you can find all the episodes that have happened so far, the whole of season 1 and 2. Season 1 was a ghost story. Season 2 was a famous five-star mystery. You can find everything at merelyroleplayers.podbean.com. And when you're there, if you are the sort of person who likes to subscribe to podcasts in a particular app or program rather than listen to them just streaming off the page, there are links on that site to all of the places, the iTunes, the Stitcher, mm-hmm. the Acast,
yep.
the all of them.
And if you've enjoyed listening, then please do leave a positive review, because that helps get more visibility for the podcast.
Yes, it does.
So, how are you feeling about the next season?
I'm a little nervous still, because as we're recording this, I haven't fully planned everything.
Uh-huh.
But I'm actually trying to plan even less this time.
Is that because you always think, oh, I haven't planned enough, and then we go on and on and on?
Partly that. And partly I want it to be more, I want it to be less all of you moving through a load of stuff that I have come up with.
Okay.
And more us creating a story together.
Oh.
So I want there to be lots more opportunities for all of you to create characters and details and
okay.
things. But I think I can say that it's going to be a con or heist caper.
Yes!
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it's going to go Ocean's 8 on this mother.
Okay. Well, there's all that to look forward to. And if you want something live and real life in person to look forward to, then Frankie Fightwell is the thing for you. You can book tickets. They're available online. Just go to blackshawonline.com and you'll be able to click through from there. And it is happening on the 11th and 12th of May at Putney Arts Theatre as part of the Wandsworth Arts Fringe, supported by the Wandsworth Arts Grant. It is a live radio play full of silliness, madcap antics and Nazi man spiders. If you want to find out more, you can go to our blog. Again, go to our website, blackshoreonline.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and you'll find all the information, backstage stuff, photos, wonderful things.
We will be recording it, and the recording will presumably go out on this feed as part of the Black Shore Arts Hour. But if you only listen to it on the audio and you don't come and see it in person, then you will miss out on all of the visual feast that is Andy Crane's Foley.
That is correct.
And how he creates all of the crazy sound effects of Nazi man spiders.
Exactly.
And stuff.
And fantastically, the Friday night show on the 11th of May will be signed by a British Sign Language interpreter. So if you have those access needs, they will be catered for. And we will be around in the bar afterwards for chats, catch-ups and meetings. So if anyone who is a fan has been listening and wants to come and chat to us and learn more about the company and what we do, that's a great opportunity to do so.
You'll be able to find all the Blackshore people because they'll be wearing Blackshore lanyards.
Yes, we are well supplied in lanyards. So book your tickets, blackshoreonline.com, and come and join us for that bit of fun. And if you want more fun, then we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, all up in your ears, to chat to you about more arts stuff. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Blackshore Arts Hour.
Follow us on Twitter at Blackshore Update.
Watch us on the Instagrams at Blackshore Theatre.
Like us on the Facebook at Blackshore Online.
And find all the things at blackshoreonline.com.